is the John Steigerwald Show on AM 1250 and FM 92.5. The Answer.
I'm a suburban guy. Grew up in the South Hills. And as I got older, I moved a little further away from the city. I never understood city living, even though I spent about 30 years working downtown. And with what's going on in the world now, living or working in the city doesn't seem like such a good idea. Joel Kotkin is a presidential fellow in urban futures at Chapman University, and he's the executive director of the Urban Reform Institute. He joins us now. Joel, thanks for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So you wrote a piece for Fortune saying that after the coronavirus, we need to rethink densely populated cities. So you know, we just were heard from our governor today, and the non-densely populated areas are moved from red to yellow, which is stupid to a little less stupid. And so the people here in the dense Allegheny County still are on red. So do you think a lot more people are rethinking it now than might have been 2 months ago about whether it's a good idea to live in a city?
Well, I think that's, you know, of course it depends how you define a city, but I would think it's this way. You know, I think that we know before this was happening that people were beginning to move out of the big, dense cities, New York, Chicago, L.A., all lost population in the last couple of years. The big movement has been either to suburbs, smaller cities, or kind of sprawling sunbelt cities like Phoenix or Dallas. Those are places that have been attracting particularly younger, educated people. So this was already happening, but I think now people have more incentive to look at other alternatives. And at the same time, more and more companies are beginning to understand that they can work remotely, either in a satellite office or people working out of their homes. And that's going to open up a lot of opportunities.
Yeah. Well, is there any one reason that's more prevalent for people leaving places like New York, L.A., or Chicago? Is it just you don't need to live there anymore, or they, you know, is it? And what are we talking about as far as the number of people leaving? Is it mass numbers?
Oh, the numbers are pretty big. The numbers coming out of California and New York are pretty strong. You know, you're talking about net losses, you know, tens of thousands of people. You also have people who are not coming. Who, let's say, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, if I asked students in a class, where do you want to go? And they would say New York, Washington, San Francisco, and maybe Los Angeles. Now I'm hearing Nashville and Lake Tahoe and Texas and Indianapolis, and you know. So I think that people have a different perception. I think one thing is the cost issue. Now that may sort of correct itself to some extent. The dispersion of work, which is continuing to happen. And I think also, frankly, a lot of our urban centers, not necessarily the metros, but the urban centers are governed by people who, you know, basically are not very concerned, let's say, about public safety. I mean, you have cities like San Francisco, Seattle, L.A. with massive homeless populations. You have district attorneys who are essentially allowing prisoners out on the streets. You have situations like in some of the cities here in California where, you know, you can steal up to $1,000 and it's not a felony.
Yeah.
I mean, so this disorder issue, I think, which has really not been paid attention to, I think, as much as it should be, but I think it's very significant.
I might not lean toward San Francisco when I find out that humans are pooping on the street. And if I open a little business that if someone steals a $700 item, he's not going to be prosecuted for it. I mean, that would tend to, I think, kind of make people shy away rather than be attracted to you.
Well, I would think that would be the case. I think, you know, a lot of it depends on who you are. It's also particularly difficult on people. What we're seeing is the group that there's still a tremendous attraction to the core city for people in their early 20s. They're single, they don't have kids, you know, they're trying to meet somebody of the opposite sex or the same sex, depending on their orientation. And the city offers a lot, and the risks of the city don't seem as bad. As you get older And particularly as you decide, well, I want to buy a house, or I want to get married, or I want to have a family, the benefits are reduced. And unfortunately, whereas some cities, for instance, were beginning to improve their education system, crime was going down, which really was encouraging people to stay. Now crime seems to be going up in a lot of cities. The social disorder is greater. And of course, the school systems, all the progress in the school systems, like with charters, has declined in most big cities as well.
Yeah, to get back to what's going on now with the coronavirus, it would be hard to imagine even a young person now who might have been inclined to want to live in New York wanting to do that anymore.
I mean, I would think that, there's some evidence that that may be the case. I think also you're going to find that many of the jobs are going to go somewhere else, too. I mean, the problem is the system that New York lives on, and I'm a native New Yorker, the system that New York lives on is massive movements of people from the periphery, let's say Queens, Nassau, Westchester, into Manhattan, into the most crowded parts of the United States. That has turned out to be a disaster. And I think there's still lots of things that New York can do and things that make it very attractive. But I think it's going to be less attractive to more people. And I think it's very important to understand this generation coming up, this is going to be a formative experience for them. And if their brothers or sisters were stuck in a studio apartment in Manhattan for 3-4 months, that may not be a great role model that they want to emulate.
Yeah, my nephew was living in Brooklyn, and he escaped just when this coronavirus started to happen. He was smart enough to get out of there, and he's been holed up in our place up in Canada for over a month now. And it doesn't matter because he can't work. He's starting to collect unemployment now because he's not living where his job is, and his job doesn't exist anyway because everything's closed up. New York was very attractive to him. I have a nephew and a niece living there, and I don't know why anybody would want to stay there if you don't have to with what's going on. You mentioned, coming from the periphery into the most crowded part. Are you talking about subways then? I think
subways.
I saw 77% of the people who work, I don't know if it's in Manhattan, but 77% of the people who commute to work and back do it by subway.
No, there's subways. It could also be buses. But you also have had fairly high levels of infection in what we might call the commuter suburbs of Nassau County, Westchester County, where people get on trains. They don't tend to be as crowded as the subways, although I've been on ones that are pretty crowded. And I just think people are going to start thinking twice about it. And frankly, I think if it turns out that you have to wear a mask to get on the subway and that you have to social distance, so what are you going to do, sit there and wait until the subway is not crowded? It's going to be a very, very difficult transition for sure.
Well, I wonder how long they're going to expect to be able to get away with even doing that. I mean, that just doesn't seem to be feasible. I mean, I've been to New York many times, haven't been there in a while, and I've been on the subway, and people are jammed in there, and hordes of people rush to the, through the turnstiles at certain times of the day. I don't know how they can have a subway and at the same time say we don't want people close to each other. That's just, it doesn't work.
Well, I think there are going to be a lot of changes. I've been working on what sort of changes New York City should be doing, and, certainly, they're going to have to figure out ways of dispersing employment. The problem is the big power in New York and many big cities are real estate interests who own downtown real estate and have put all their money into luxury towers and all, mm-hmm. and high-rise office buildings, and it's going to be ugly.
Yeah, no, I live right next to an office park. I'm in Washington County, and we're talking to Joel Kotkin. He is the executive director of the Urban Reform Institute. I live right next to an office park. I moved out here a long time, 30 years ago, to a neighborhood near here, and then 20 years ago I moved into this area, but when I moved out here, there were sheep grazing on the hillsides, and it's only about 16 miles from downtown Pittsburgh, and right now I look out my window and I see what looks like a mini city of office buildings. Now, they didn't exist 20 years ago, and now it's a mini city, and these people don't have to pay to park. They don't have to get on a crowded bus or a subway. They don't have to sit in rush hour traffic. And why would I, if I owned a business in Pittsburgh and my lease was up in my big, tall office building downtown, why would I not want to figure out a way that I can get out of there and come to a place like this?
Well, this is certainly what we're hearing. What we're hearing more and more when we talk to CEOs is that also they found that distance work, actually, you know, at people working at home has worked out well. Mm-hmm. They know that, let's say you're downtown, you're a bank, does everybody have to go into town to do their jobs? They're now proving they can do their jobs remotely.
If not remotely from home, Joel, they don't have to go and do it in a skyscraper downtown. It used to be that, you know, I'm old enough to remember when downtown really was important and everybody worked downtown, and, you know, people walked from office building to office building, and they had, you know, mail clerks who delivered mail from one building to another, and it's all done by email now. It doesn't even make any sense anymore.
Well, I think what you're going to see, and I'm working on this quite a bit these days, is this notion that you may start seeing the growth of what might be sort of subcenters, or, you know, areas that give you many of the things that cities gave you, you know, restaurants, entertainment, parks, things like that, but you don't have to go into the city for them. You can go someplace closer to home. I mean, this idea of dispersing employment, which has really become pretty dominant anyway, but this notion that everybody is going to get on a train or a bus and go downtown and be, you know, surrounded by people who are certainly not 6 feet away, I think that's going to become, you know, less and less and less attractive. And, you know, again, we're going to have an entire generation that's going to be thinking about social distancing. Now, obviously, they're not going to be able to do it all the time, but it's going to become a consideration, and it's logical that it would be a consideration. What we found is that the real factor seems to be what we call exposure density. In other words, not just how dense an area is, but how often are you exposed to other people? Like, for instance, you know, a worst case scenario, you live in a crowded building in Queens, you get on the street, it's a crowded street, you get on the subway, it's a crowded subway, you get into Grand Central Station, which is incredibly crowded, then you walk to a crowded office building, and then you eat lunch in a crowded a lunch place, and your exposures every single time. And we also now are beginning to find that a lot of the really worst exposures seem to be people who are in unventilated spaces, elevators, subways, whereas if you're outside, your chances of exposure seem to be much, much less. And if you're in a more airy environment, it's much less.
And you're talking about New York, Joel, but what about Pittsburgh? And what about, I don't know, another city like Pittsburgh, Kansas City, you know? What about cities like that? How are they going to be different from New York, if at all? I mean, New York's New York, and it's always going to be something special about that.
Well, I mean, I think that what you're going to see is that in many of these other cities, first of all, they don't have, you know, they don't have high percentage of people on transit. I assume that, I know Kansas City, it's all, you know, really negligible. I don't think it's much in Pittsburgh either. I mean, I can look up the numbers.
We have a subway, but it's not. It doesn't serve even every area. You know what I mean? It's concentrated in one place.
So I mean, I think that these cities, or if you want to put it in the terms of regions, regions like Pittsburgh, regions like Kansas City, could become beneficiaries as businesses, for this reason and other reasons, begin to move, look for places where they can operate much more affordably and where their employees can afford to live a decent way of life and can actually afford to live in an area where the schools are good. I mean, look, I can tell you that personally, our biggest reason for moving from Los Angeles to Orange County was in Southern California is schools. My daughter goes to public schools, goes to a very good public school.
Yeah.
And so I think that there are so many different forces that were already in place and that this will likely accelerate them. I think the future of most core cities is going to be what H.G. Wells predicted in 1904, which is that they will be places of concourse and rendezvous. There'll be places where people without children live. There'll be places, you know, he calls them of elegant extinction.
I only have 30 seconds left, Joel, and I'm up against a hard break. I really appreciate you being on, and it's really interesting stuff there.
All right.
Thank you very much.
We can pick it up at some other time. Thank you.
Yes, I'd like to. Thank you. That's Joel Kotkin. He's from the Urban Reform Institute. We'll be right back.